Welcome back. I'm Peter Wood, and I'm the author of Mud Between Your Toes, A Rhodesian Farm, which is a memoir about my life growing up in Zimbabwe, or formerly Rhodesia, in the 1960s and 70s. This is a podcast about family, independence, loss, and above all, identity. In my last episode, I read you a chapter from my book about my trip back to the old farm. It really got me thinking about all those folk who had lost their farms and been displaced during those very dark days. These were hard times, and people needed to do whatever it took to put food on their tables. But it's worth noting that the nightmare for many was only just beginning. Many had never known another life and found themselves thrust into a world that must have been stranger than fiction. The more adventurous of the women left the country to work overseas in menial jobs. The worst I can imagine were those carers who went to retirement homes in Devon or Somerset to wipe the bottoms of old irascible men. But if it meant being able to send money back home, well, all the better. Not all the stories were sad, however, so instead of reading a passage from my book, I want to tell you a story about one farmer's wife and her experience. This is the story about Liz. You'll have to forgive me, a little bit of artistic license has meant I've changed the names of some of the characters in the story. And Liz, if you are listening, please forgive me for this artistic license. I'm retelling it as I heard it through the Zim vine. She stood beneath a large plane tree and looked up at the imposing John Nash building that gracefully arced around the lower end of Regent Street. Surely not, she thought. It can't possibly be this place. Gently, she unfolded the now crumpled piece of paper bearing the address and peered back at the building. Number 7, Park Crescent, was a whole house built in the early 19th century Regency style. Golly, Liz said quietly, rather different to my old farmhouse in Zim. Well, a job's a job, she thought, shaking her head. She hated delving into the past, but was quite unavoidable at times. Thinking back to those awful days 2 years earlier when Mugabe's war veterans had stormed her beautiful garden, uprooting shrubs and ransacking the veranda. Oh, she shuddered. They had been forced off the farm that they had put their entire lives into. With a final look back at the blue Ayrshire Hills around the district of Rafangora, they loaded the car and pickup and, like refugees, spent the next few months bumming off friends and relatives. God, it was all too ghastly. And with little or no income, many of these stoic Zimbabwean farmers' wives had to become rather creative where money was concerned. Having tried her hand at odd jobs in Harare, none of which panned out, she now found herself in London, the wrong side of 60, staring up at a stunning house along an equally fabulous crescent, hemmed in on one side by Regent's Park and on the other by a set of huge, black, wrought iron gates. Oh, don't worry, the owners said, shouting down the crackling line from London to Harare 3 weeks earlier. You'll be just fine. You only have to house it and, of course, take Casper on his daily walk through the park. The pay seemed rather good and was only for a month whilst the owners were away in Australia for their daughter's wedding. And foreign currency spoke volumes back home. The Zim dollar, of course, was in free fall. Liz thought about some of her friends who had been less fortunate. Cleaning those bums. Too awful for words. She straightened her back and with a brief glance on either side, strode across the road to the front door. After all, she thought, what could possibly go wrong? The first 2 weeks went without a hitch. The stairs, of course, gave her arthritis a bit of stick, her bedroom being right at the top. But other than that, it was rather special living in such splendid surroundings. Deep, luxurious Axminster carpets, de Gournay's silk wallpaper and drapery from Julian Charles. She knew these finer things and appreciated them. And every morning she'd open the chintz curtains, pull up the sash window and breathe in the fresh air from the park adjacent to the house. Simply divine, she thought. And then after a quick breakfast, she'd collar up Casper and take him on his morning walkies. She was surprised how old and overweight the Alsatian was, but at least he wasn't like her own Rhodesian ridgebacks who would tear your arm off as they careered off after a rabbit or a duiker. With Casper, every day she took a different route exploring the park as she went. Some days she took him on a slow amble through Queen Mary's Rose Garden, stopping for a sandwich at the open-air theatre. Other days she found herself in the sculptor park or feeding the ducks on the boating lake, and on warmer days she would buy an ice cream from the kiosk along the inner circle, sit on a bench and chat to the other dog lovers. Still, her favourite place was Queen Mary's Rose Garden. She was never disappointed by the fantastic colours and scents coming from the blooms. 12,000 roses, delphinium borders, a Mediterranean border and swaths of begonias, all guiding you to the divine fountain of Triton, Poseidon's merman son, who was seen blowing on a twisted conch like a trumpet to calm or raise the waves. But how she missed her own garden, the verdant cuckoo lawns rolling down to the banks of floribunda icebergs, and then the harsh, dry bush beyond, creating an impenetrable barrier right at the end. The Ayrshire Hills had some of the most extraordinary balancing rocks and granite kopjes in the country. They seemed to force their way through the earth all around the farm. Throughout the day, they would change colour, from glowing raw siennas and yellow ochres in the early morning to dark sapphire and steel greys by midday. And then, as the sun set, they would turn into a delicate pale cobalt or Prussian blue, a perfect contrast to the violet of the jacarandas in the garden. God, it was sublime, and she never tired of it. One brisk morning, Liz and Casper found themselves near the London Zoo. It was much further than their usual walk, but it was such a lovely day, she simply hadn't noticed the time nor the distance. She felt the leash go taut and heavy in her hand. "Come along, Casper," she called. "No time for a rest." She turned around to give the elderly dog a tug on the leash, and to her absolute horror, Casper had keeled over, dead as a dodo. Her initial reaction was to give the dog a shake, but it soon became clear that nothing short of divine intervention would resurrect Casper. His eyes stared back at her like roadkill. The next reaction was one of sheer panic. Casper was a pampered pooch and, well, weighed a lot more than Liz could manage, certainly more than she could carry over such a distance. She looked back down the path. Could anyone help her? But there was no one around. "Think, damn it," she said, staring at the dead dog. She noticed a rhododendron bush nearby and, quick as a flash, dragged Casper along the path and pushed him under the bush. "Sorry, Casper," she said, giving him an awkward pat, but not before admiring the vivid raspberry ripple flowers on the shrub first. And then, without hesitation, she rushed across the park and back to number 7. In the spacious, musty attic of the townhouse, Liz spied what she was finally after, a large two-wheeler Louis Vuitton suitcase. Lugging it back down the stairs and across the path, she was relieved to see that Casper was still beneath the verdant shrub and no one had discovered him. She waited for a jogger and her beagle to go past. The beagle clearly didn't have much of a sense of smell. And then, gathering her strength, rolled the dog into the suitcase. Quick as a flash, she zipped him up. Job done. By the time Liz had reached Park Crescent, the sun was high and a sheen of perspiration was forming across her brow. Placing the suitcase on the pavement, she walked up the few steps to the front door of number 7, whilst fumbling for the keys. Heavens, why on earth do they have so many, she muttered to herself. You look like you could do with some help, madam, said a man behind her with a cut-glass accent. Looking down, she saw an extremely well-groomed couple smiling up at her. May we help you with your suitcase, said the girl, with a Cheltenham Ladies' College accent. Oh, my goodness, explained Liz, how kind of you. You're my guardian angels. Now I just need to find the right key, she answered, turning her back on the helpful couple and fiddling with the key ring. Ah, got it, she cried with satisfaction. If you'll just bring the case up the steps, that would be love. Turning around, she looked, and the couple were nowhere to be seen. They had gone, vanished, together with the suitcase. And with Casper. I haven't a clue who got the biggest shock, Liz would say afterwards. Me or those kids. Imagine when they finally opened their swag to be greeted by Casper, glassy-eyed and tongue lolling out of his mouth, rigor mortis having set into his limbs. Well, that's about it. Thank you so much for listening to me. And remember, you can tune into my new episodes of Mud Between Your Toes via iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, Blueberry, and Pocket Casts. Don't forget, you can always buy a copy of my book on both Amazon and Kindle. And I also welcome comments by email on mudbetweenyourtoes@gmail.com. If you want to get involved and you have a good story to tell about those years in Rhodesia, and if you're brave enough to be interviewed for Mud Between Your Toes, feel free to write to me. Goodbye.